There's a story told about author Vladimir Nabokov of how, on hearing sharp criticism of his translation of one of Russia's classics, replied, "So learn Russian." You could say Nabokov took flak for his translation or was dissed. Either way, you'd be using an expression unique to English. Author Christopher J. Moore has a new book that explores what's lost in translation. It's called In Other Words, a compilation of words and phrases that catch the gist of an experience, a feeling, or a tradition in a way so precise other languages just don't have a match.
In modern Greek, there's a lovely word which I have started to use quite a lot, which is meraki. And it's the feeling that you put into what you do with affection, with love. For instance, if you're arranging some flowers, if you're making some muffins, even if you're just reorganizing your sitting room. So I think that's a beautiful word. I think we can learn from that because although we may have some consciousness of doing such things, we have no way of referring to it. And it's nice to have a word that identifies it. So I've started to do things with Meraki.
You know, there's an expression in French that is surprising in a way that English speakers don't have an equivalent to it, esprit de l'escalier.
Yes, it means the wit of the staircase in French, which refers to the brilliant riposte that you wished you had made, but which only occurs to you as you're walking away down the stairs, and you just snap your fingers and you say, "Oh, I wish I'd said that." But of course, it's too late.
Does it surprise you, though, that there isn't an expression in English for that? Because it's a very recognizable moment.
Well, we could say an afterthought, I suppose, but it doesn't have quite that sort of precision and wit of esprit de l'escalier.
There's a lovely Japanese expression. It's called yokomeshi. It means
Yes.
this much I know. It means boiled rice. That's meshi. And yoko means horizontal. But when you put the two of them together, what do you get in Japanese?
You get a way of referring to the difficulty of learning to write a European tongue because Japanese is written vertically and that's eating rice. But if you're forced suddenly to start writing horizontally, then you're eating rice lying down and that's quite difficult. So the word expresses colorfully the problem that you have as a Japanese person of coming to terms with writing horizontally.
Without the direct references to eating, we could all use that expression.
For any linguistic challenge, we could transfer it to our own problems in learning Chinese or Greek or Russian, for instance.
We've just been talking about words that sum up perfectly a situation we recognize in our own culture, but we just don't have a word in English for them. Let's turn to words that express cultural difference, if you will. Pick another one for us that is a word that we just somehow, even though these things happen in our own culture, we just don't have a word or a phrase for it.
Well, let me take one which slightly reflects on international relations. I think this is partly my motivation for putting the book together. The Arabic language has no word for compromise. Now, compromise to us is a hard negotiated solution to an issue where everybody has to give way and give up something. The Arab language has no word for that. But they have a wonderful word, which is tahradin, which means, to quote the psychological phrase, I win, you win. It's more of a resolution in which nobody loses face, and therefore nobody is forced to give up the thing that will cause them shame. And to recognize what a language can say in its own terms and what it can't say, we have to make a cultural jump in order to produce solutions. And that means we need to know the mindset of where the other person's coming from.
Would any that you came across in the book actually be something to, write on your hand when you head for any particular country?
Oh, yes, very much so. If you're a businessman going to Japan, I would strongly advise you to read the Japanese section because you might not know, for instance, of the concepts of tatame and honne. Tatame is for a Japanese person. The reality that everybody publicly accepts but privately don't believe. And honne is your own private belief, which you never admit publicly. So if you wish to engage in dialogue with someone, to realize that they even have such concepts.
Right.
They have a very different sense of concept of sincerity, for instance.
So in other words, you wouldn't necessarily use the words, but it would be very useful to know those words exist because those words would tell you a great deal about what you're dealing with in a new culture.
Exactly. They would be explanatory in the sense that if you're dealing with people and you don't quite know what they're getting at, you could bear these things in mind and it might help you.
How did it happen that you came to write this book? Where did this begin for you?
Well, I've spent most of my working life traveling and living abroad as a kind of professional foreigner. And so all these things kind of came together in this book because I was really quite concerned, in a way, to introduce people across the world to other ways of looking at things. And I think that's such an important message for all of us, that we cannot become too confident that our way of seeing the world is the only possible way. It's important to recognize that even the most humble and quiet and simple people have extraordinary ways of conceiving and perceiving things from which we can learn.
Christopher Moore, thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you. But there's one word which I must try and get in to here, which because I find it so, it makes me chuckle every time I see it. It's a Czech word, litošť, and it was defined by Milan Kundera, the Czech author, as a state of torment created by the sudden sight of one's own misery. I think that's so hilariously funny. If I were ever feeling litošť, I think I would just think of the definition and I would start laughing. So that would probably cure the problem.
Christopher J. Moore is the author of In Other Words, A Language Lover's Guide to the Most Intriguing Words Around the World. If you are intrigued and would like to approach the meaning of the Spanish word duende or the Chinese word guangqi, plus what translators call the world's most untranslatable word, visit our website, npr.org. This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montagne.